Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the A10 Talk podcast. Sam Basil joined alongside Daniel Frank and Kaylee Godek. And I feel like the last time the three of us plus David convened, we were in some pretty sour spirits. But if last week or if 2 weeks ago was a pretty decisive blow, Wednesday night, especially on the men's side, almost feels like a killing blow for the A10 having a really good chance of being a 2-3 bid league this year. I mean, you know, two even, like three being a stretch at this point. So we're just coming off of, you know, some tough losses on Wednesday night, but coming, you know, minutes, seconds off of a tough loss for the UMass Minutemen. And I know we pushed, you know, the start of our recording time back to finish it. So Kaylee, if it doesn't pain you too much, could you break down what happened for the flagship school tonight?
So I will do my best too. I watched the entire first half, no problem with it. We got down pretty quick. I want to say at half we were down by 8 points. We are without Noah Fernandes for our second consecutive game, and there's a pretty strong chance of no Noah Fernandes for the Hofstra game. Basically, first half, we were in there, but I think we just had a slow start. Coach Martin was very quiet on the bench from what I was seeing on the TV. I really think if we had Fernandes, this would have ended in a better outcome for UMass Amherst, not UMass Lowell. But I had to turn it off after halftime because we started digging too big of a hole, and I just could not watch it without screaming at the TV and making my neighbors think I'm a lunatic. And also so I can preserve my voice for the podcast and being able to scream at WNE's final home game of the season for the 2022 portion of the season. So I need to save my voice. But basically, Matt Cross had a good like second half with ending the night with 19 points. RJ Luis had 14 points on the night, really lit up in the second half, helping us dig into this 14-point hole deficit, basically. And if we had Fernandes and if we had access to the entire roster, I think we would have been fine tonight. I think we would have like had a good chance. And going against Hofstra is going to be a very interesting one to see if we will have Fernandes and if we'll have Russell Diggins, because I guess he went down early second half with like a leg injury as well and was pretty shaken up and didn't return back to the game. So a lot of pressure got put on to Keon Thompson, RJ Luis to basically carry the point guard position for most of the night without Noah Fernandes or Diggins around. So it's going to be interesting to see that Hofstra game.
Yeah, so a tough night. You mentioned this is the second game without Noah Fernandes. And, you know, in their first game against, you know, UMass Lowell's fellow America East member, Albany, they pulled off, a pretty solid win, an 87-73 win. Obviously, you know, 3-7 Albany is not 10-1 UMass Lowell. But yeah. What was, aside from, you know, the quality of the opponent, what was different for you watching UMass against Albany without Fernandes than watching UMass against Lowell without Fernandes? Did you feel like there was something more missing, or do you feel like UMass kind of just got away with a bit of a weaker opponent without their best player?
I think they just got away with a weaker opponent without Fernandes being around. And also the fact too is, I want to mention a comment that Coach Martin made in his post-game conference, press conference against UAlbany, actually, that Michael Bergman posted afterwards, which was how the team felt like there was no leadership, that they've been running on fumes since the Myrtle Beach, their Myrtle Beach run. So this loss tonight could be literally us running out of the fumes from the Myrtle Beach run. And with no Fernandes being available, and I guess no one is talking in huddles from the comment he made last night too, on Monday night, basically just having only like running on fumes, and there's no one talking in the huddles other than Keon Thompson, a freshman. That goes to show you right there, there's definitely some leadership missing, and they weren't even talking in practice. There is a video link if you do want to go and actually listen into Coach Martin's post-game press conference with the press for the UAlbany game. It's definitely a good listen. You can definitely, I listened to it after Michael posted it, actually. And it's definitely a good thing to listen to understand where he's coming from with all this.
Yeah, so, I mean, tough break for UMass. They got Hofstra on Sunday, a pretty good Hofstra team, the one that has played already a couple A-10 teams and will play one or two more before non-conference play is up. But, yeah, I mean, I think that just – it just serves to be another tough loss in a, you know, I don't want to mince words here, an awful week for the conference. I know last night's slate was a little tough, so let's just run through that a little bit. The two games that I was watching, you know, and again, it's so hard to say that this is a, you know, it's one of the crappy things in my opinion about college basketball, in that You're relying so much on like two to maybe three teams to get wins, and when they're not doing it, you kind of have to be in a bad mood. Even though we've got 9-1 Fordham, 7-2 Duquesne, 7-2 UMass, and Davidson last night, now 7-3, who put on a great performance against Western Carolina. They looked incredibly dominant in transition. They were crashing the glass. Desmond Watson in his first start for the Wildcats has 17 points. But again, a great performance, a great game if you're a fan of one of those teams. But, you know, in the bigger picture, in the world of KenPoms and net rankings, there were some rough performances, such as VCU against Jacksonville, which is the other game I was watching last night. They lost 73-62 to Jacksonville at home in a second half that I can only describe as just it was almost brain dead to watch. I mean, VCU looked bad in transition. They were not hitting any of their shots. I mean, they were pretty much getting most of their points early on from the line. I don't know if either of you got a chance to watch any of those games, but I mean, we can even get into the, you know, Dayton's 77-49 loss at Virginia Tech, in which they were outscored 42-21 in the first half. Where do you go from here?
It's tough scenes. It's really tough scenes. I do want to give Jacksonville the slightest bit of credit. I mean, they are a halfway decent team. They were in the Atlantic Sun Championship game a year ago. So at least they're not like some like god awful 360 like University of Louisville men's basketball is right now. But no, it's real tough scenes out here. I mean, Rhodey's lost to Brown. I know Rhodey's bad. I fully am aware that Rhode Island is just a bad men's team this year. But you got to beat the Ivies, especially the middlings to lower end of the Ivies. Like you, I don't care if you're the 15th team in the Atlantic 10. You got to beat somebody. I know everyone, and I was listening to Chris Pyle's Spaces last night after the Dayton game, which was very entertaining from the outside perspective. I will say to Dayton fans to pump the brakes the slightest bit, on the reason that, like, they're missing half the starting lineup. Like, if Dayton was doing this with a fully healthy Malachi Smith and everybody else, like, yeah, okay, I would be alarmed. But, like, look, Dayton had all these expectations, and it's fallen short. But, like, yeah, I will say Duquesne's lost tonight. It's real rough. It's real rough.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. You definitely bring up a great point to, you know, kind of level people's heads a little bit. But, you know, before I get into this, I just want to say UMass Lowell, after the conclusion of this, or actually, no, before the conclusion of this game, because right now the most recent KenPom has them at 9-1. So they're 10-1 now. They're obviously 10-1 now. Heading into this game, UMass Lowell was 119th in the KenPom.
But they were like 54th in the net.
12 spots above UMass Amherst.
Weird.
And again, look, this is the point of the year where KenPom and the net really are tough to evaluate. But I just, you know, they're not the bottom feeder team that they've been all these years. But you bring up a great point in talking about Dayton's injuries, right? Because yes, this is not a fully healthy team would not be putting up the performances that they're putting up right now. They would not lose 77-49 to Virginia Tech. They might, you know, there's a lot of, you know, what ifs. But I think where the worry comes from is, yes, you know, that a loss like that does not actually speak to the talent or the quality of your team, right? But these algorithms don't care. The selection committees do not care. You know what I mean? So I think that's where the worry's from. It's that, yes, you have that injury, but it's not going to matter come Selection Sunday where you had that opportunity for that game and you could not come up. You came up short. Again, I'm not going to put the blame on Dayton, but when you're a mid-major school, you're running on borrowed time here. And that's why, you know, with about 2 weeks, maybe three to go before conference play begins in full, you know, we've seen some conference play games, you know, from a smattering of schools around the country. I know Ohio State got a big win against Rutgers in the Big Ten. You know, St. John's played DePaul already, but, you know, we have not seen any A-10 versus A-10 matchups yet. So until we do, we've got some really good games that I think will not only be very entertaining to watch for A-10 schools against some other schools around the country, but will also be really important in giving the A-10, you know, one last chance to kind of salvage a multi-bid season. So, Daniel, if you want to go first and give a couple games, and then we can just talk about them and see, you know, the ramifications or what's going to be really important heading into those ones.
Yeah, I'm going to give you three in a row here because it's St. Louis's remaining non-conference schedule. St. Louis, as of tonight, is 7-3, with their three losses being neutral site to Maryland and then road losses to Auburn and Iona. None of those losses should hurt them. I know everyone thinks that St. Louis should be in Iona, but look, Iona's a damn good team. Rick Pitino is their head coach. That's not going to be held against them, I don't think.
Mm.
That said, they have the opportunity for some really good wins. Really solid wins, at least. I feel like they only truly think it's a good win if it's over a Power 5, but that's neither here nor there. Starting on Saturday, SLU hosts Boise State, who is net number 56. Following Saturday after that, they host net 57, Drake. And then they round out the non-con with a sneaky good game against net number 100, SIU Edwardsville. I'll be honest, the margin is thin for St. Louis. I don't think it's as thin as UMass's margin is, but it's pretty thin. St. Louis needs to win two of these games unequivocally. They might need all three of them, but I mean, they're three home games against what are these quad twos? I guess they'd all be. I guess Edwardsville might be three, depending on how the numbers fall, because that's still like a week and a half away. But no, these are. I mean, St. Louis has. Despite the rest of the conference stumbling over itself, St. Louis has quietly done, I don't think they've exceeded expectations, but I think they've done the minimum of what they had to do to stay afloat. They're kind of right at that the water level right now where they're afloat. They've taken on a little water. They're not sunk yet. So this is a really big stretch for SLU coming up.
Yeah, you know, if you really look at it, I'm looking at SLU's, you know, record as of now. I will only say where they've stumbled is, you know, giving up as many points as they, or losing by as many points as they did to Maryland and losing by as many points as they did to Iona. Because I totally agree with you in the fact that Iona is not a team that they should have beaten. It's a team that they could have beaten.
Yeah.
But no matter what, as long as you give them a game, you're good to go. And honestly, they did not give them a game. You know what I mean? You know, 84-62 is not where you want to be. Just because it's the MAC doesn't mean you should go in thinking it's a, you know, it's an automatic win. You just can't shoot 26% from three against another mid-major school. A question I have for you is, you know, and then some other games, you know, on my own list, I picked because they kind of work in tandem with St. Louis's. Richmond Drake this weekend, St. Bonaventure versus Iona this weekend. How important for you, you know, say let's put the both of you in two chairs of the NCAA selection committee. How important is it that conferences, and again, like we've seen so many schools schedule Hofstra, you know, A-10 schools schedule Hofstra this year. How important is it for conferences, you know, to kind of work with each other on wins or strong performances against similar schools?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something I was kind of joking about the other night as I was at Mason watching Maryland Eastern Shore, because I'm always comparing GW and Mason in my head, and that was the first shared opponent on that they'd had in which they both were home games. So it was like more of a true comparison. And I always kind of find that dynamic to be interesting. The thing that's so interesting about the upcoming, I guess, weekend here, because normally with the Atlantic 10, we're always rooting for our own teams to be doing so well. Like, we want, even at, like, the worst, everyone wants St. Joe's to beat whoever. Like, even though they're, like, the bottom of the conference for the men right now. Are we mathematically rooting for St. Bonaventure and Richmond to lose those games so that they're better net-ranked teams when St. Louis gets them? Like, that's the question here. Because your gut intuitively tells you, hey, you should root for Bonner to want to do well, and you should want to root for Richmond to do well, but, like, neither of them have a shot at an at-large hope.
That's a good question.
What's the play here?
I mean, kind of going off of what you're saying, Daniel, I mean, if you really, like, look at it, like, the standings right now, it doesn't, in our favor, your really only hopes right now look like St. Louis, Fordham, UMass, and Duquesne, with them either having one to three losses. Like, you're looking at, like, a range there, but they've played some pretty tough opponents. I mean, I know St. Louis played Auburn, Maryland, and who was that last one you said? I forgot.
SIU.
Iona.
Iona. Yeah, Iona. Those three teams all are, like, big contender teams, and Auburn is still undefeated on the season, to the last of my knowledge. Yep. With that being said, like, St. Louis faced really tough opponents there. Iona's probably going to be top of the MAC for, like, however long Pitino has been up at Iona. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see St. Bonaventure lose on Sunday to a really good Iona team. But at the same time, like, you want them to kind of win, but by doing that, you're going to be pushing down St. Louis's net rankings, who's, like, one of our only hopes right now. We do have, like, a few teams that we can be looking at closely on this, but honestly, I don't even know if there's a few teams that would be, like, our really only hopes right now. Because right now, it just looks like we're a one-and-done league.
I'll be honest with you. I think there's only two teams left that have any hope, and I think it's St. Louis, and I think it's UMass, if we're talking at large. I'm sorry, Sam. I don't think Fordham has a shot. And after seeing Duquesne tonight, they don't have a prayer. Name brand comes into play here. UMass, I don't think, can afford another non-conference loss. And, I mean, St. Louis's margin is thin. UMass's is razor thin.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your hope is just St. Louis loses in the A-10 tournament, which is always a possibility.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, UMass, for the remaining games on the schedule, they have Hofstra on Sunday as the nightcap of a quadruple header at the Barclays Center. They have North Texas the following Saturday, the 17th, and Dartmouth on the 20th. Out of all of those, I know we can come out with one win for sure. And that's the Dartmouth game. If we can get our act together and get, like, what we want accomplished done, I think we will have a better chance of trying to get a better spot for an at-large, as long as we can beat Hofstra and North Texas. And I do know that I thought I saw on Twitter either yesterday or today that James Estrada is out with an ankle injury right now.
So yeah. He got hurt at the Mason game. He got hurt at the end of the game at Mason.
I want him out for Sunday. I know it's not nice of me to say that, but I'm sorry. Having them have their best player out and us have our best player out, that kind of outweighs like the two like things. Like, we don't have our point guard.
Do we know officially what the timeline on Fernandes is?
So I do know from what Bergman has been posting is he's going to be getting an MRI done soon on his foot. I don't think we have a definite timeline for him yet, but an ankle injury, that is pretty significant, and like, it's going to take time for him to like rebuild strength up. So he's probably going to be out for maybe the rest of the non-con. That's at worst, as long as it's not a break or like tendonitis in the foot or anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Basically, maybe back for Bonnie's, but I'm saying that could be a little bit of a stretch depending on the injury and the timeline that he has to like have for recovery.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be tough. I think UMass has a chance if they win out, yep. To be totally honest with you. And we're just, you know, you kind of blew my mind there with, you know, with how we are always rooting for Atlantic 10 teams to win. You know, I hate to think that maybe I should not always root for an A-10 team to win in non-conference play. But, I mean, I guess we'll have to see how these next 2 weeks pan out. This Sunday is going to be really interesting, too, especially depending on how St. Bonaventure does with Iona. And before we move on to, you know, talking about the women's side, I will just say this about Fordham. Look, Fordham's 9-1, right? That's awesome. That's amazing, right? It's their best start in years. The schedule that they've put together so far, and it's like them not being an at-large team is really by no fault of this exact team. But you know, again, the last three games on their schedule of their non-conference schedule are those teams have a combined record of 6-20. So I understand that these wins are nothing to really push them that high in the net or to you know really get them, you know, some at-large cred. But you know, it's whatever to me. This team was not expecting to be an at-large team. This team was probably not expecting to be 9-1 at this point in the season, but.
Take nothing away from what they've done. I mean, is this the first time since the net was implemented that Fordham's cracked the top 100?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to get back.
I feel like it is. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Fordham's not an at-large team, but take nothing away from what they have done. I mean, they have won. You can only win the games you have in front of you, and they've done that. Yeah. I mean, give them
nine times out of 10. Like,
yeah.
And the one that they lost was against the 10th best, now 9th best team in the country, who's 8-0. So, I mean, you know, that team does have a lot of injuries, you know, that are going to hurt them down the way. But again, like, what can I say to the detriment of this Fordham team?
Yeah, because looking at the net rankings right now, we have St. Louis at 80, UMass at 83. Fordham just barely cracking over the number 100 at 99, Duquesne at 101, just to name like the first four that come up. And it's like 144 for the next one, which is VCU.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. But let's go over to the women's side of things. And I think this is really interesting because
a lot more optimistic on the women's side.
Yeah, a lot more optimistic. So Daniel and Kaylee, I mean, right now, if you could make the bracket right now for the entire NCAA field, how many bids are you giving the Atlantic 10? Are you giving them two? Are you giving them three?
Ooh,
it's tough. Go ahead.
I'm gonna say two.
Two is very realistic.
Two is realistic because we had two last year, Dayton and UMass. I'm not going to go that far and say three right now. I will just say, granted, yeah, UMass did just lose to a very good Missouri team on Saturday with very limited time from Sydney Taylor. I think if Sydney was available for all of that game, I think it would have been we won that game and we would be looking at a different outcome.
You know, by 5 points too. So you got to
yeah, that again. by 5 points again.
The only
just
losses
like the
are
Tennessee
power five
one.
Losses. I mean, yeah.
So like, I can't really like knock them for that. So I would say right now, your two teams that you're looking at probably for your A10 are St. Joe's and UMass. And I will just say this. Daniel knows too, because he got contacted by me asking if I could put a team at a tie because I was having such a hard time deciding whether or not I wanted to put UMass at one. I was that hesitant this week. I will flat out say that I almost put St. Joe's at one. Being a UMass fan, I almost did that. And I mean, St. Joe's, granted, they're not playing their first true competitor until this weekend against Villanova, hinting ahead. And then, you know, who knows?
Hey, I mean, that's a big game though, you know, against ranked, right? Ranked in the top 25, yeah. Villanova. So
yeah. And okay. Villanova's number 17 in the net. I mean, we're going to get a real good gauge on how good St. Joe's is this weekend. And it's another good, I mean, this is just real quick for the non-con. I'm going to throw Rhode Island. I mean, Rhode Island is presently at 89 in the net, but they have two really good opportunities to get their net up too. They have Wake Forest on the road. They're net 84 right now. That goes up. That could be a quad two or even quad one potentially win. And they play on the road at Princeton, who's net number 67, and came within five of winning at UConn tonight, which needs no introduction. So Rhodey's not out of this equation by any stretch of the imagination either. And if these three can get to the start of conference play with minimal hits, I mean, between three of them, they have combined three losses. It is on the table for three bids still for the women. Two is probably the most likely. But it's not out of the question by any stretch.
Yeah, and so, you know, going into these last 2 weeks before we head into, you know, women's conference play, Daniel, what games are you looking forward to that could really help push these teams up on a national scale?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on them just a bit. I mean, Villanova, obviously, for St. Joe's, this is the game that we're going to learn a lot about them. I don't know if it's a must-win game for St. Joe's, but boy, if they win, they're probably going to get some votes next week. If they get to 10-0 and have a top 25 win to their name, it'd be a quad one win. That absolutely moves the needle for them. Columbia for UMass. I know Columbia is not a name on the men's side that anyone would see as moving the needle, but Columbia's 34th in the net and a very, very strong Ivy. That's also sad. This is a big weekend for moving the needle. Rhodey kind of has they have a back heavy non-con. So they got Wake on the 22nd and then the 28th at Princeton. But definitely keep an eye on those two games on Saturday, because that we will learn a lot about what this bubble situation is going to look like just from Saturday.
Yeah. And the fact that St. Joe's has not gotten a single vote. I just checked the AP women's AP poll, not even like one, like, come on. That's a bit crazy to be, hey, you know what? This Nova game could be huge for them. So let's go into, you know, just, you know, outside of, you know, pushing the bubble, popping the bubble, doing whatever you want with the bubble. Just a game that you're checking out this weekend. And, you know, I guess I'll start off. Another game that I think could be important, because Clemson is number 56 right now in KenPom. They're taking on Loyola Chicago on the men's side on Saturday. So, Kaylee, what you got? What are you watching this weekend?
Besides our WME men's and women's basketball teams on Saturday, I will be tuning in for the Columbia UMass women's game, and hopefully if I do have the time for the Villanova St. Joe's game, but I will be tuning in for the Hofstra UMass game and the Bonnies Iona game. So that's my plan right now, as long as I'm not slamming, studying, cramming for finals next week.
I think
so.
Sam
happy
knows.
I can't relate.
I know.
I do not miss those days.
Oh man.
I think Sam knows the direction I'm going to take this here. With the game I'm checking out, GW women's basketball has been in some headlines this week, notably Fox News, New York Post, and TMZ. And they return to the floor tomorrow, or I guess when this comes out today, Friday evening at 6, taking on Manhattan. They will be shorthanded four players due to some suspensions handed down by the NCAA from the, shall we say, shenanigans that occurred on Monday night at TCU. Shenanigans that we should note that both, without saying as much, both the head coach of GW, Carolyn McCombs, and Tanya Vogel, the athletic director, thinks that the suspensions that were handed down are absolutely ludicrous. And basically what Tanya said is, there's no appeals processes. There's nothing we can do about it. But Nia Robertson, Jael Thornton, Kaya Loving, and Nia Locke were all ejected, as well as Essence Brown. And Essence Brown, all of them except for Nia Locke, we think are suspended. They haven't publicly said, but reading between the lines here, it sounds like Nia is going to be okay to play Friday, but everyone else is going to be suspended for the one game. And this is something that's weird. It's not exactly how I pictured I would go viral on Twitter. from GW getting in a fight. But there was a hell of a story. And it was Nia Robertson's return game to she's from Fort Worth. When she came to GW, Coach McComb said, look, if you come here, we will play at TCU so you can play in front of your home fans. And she was ejected in the second quarter. And that is just tough.
Yeah. I will say I did catch the first half of that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like,
and you can't tell me that GW wasn't going to win that game if they didn't lose three starters there.
They were playing very close with it too. So like it's not like it was a huge loss. Like they were playing close. If they didn't have this huge fight and Danielle going into Twitter fame and David complaining about TCU women's basketball blocking every single GW reporter out there.
Including me. It was obscene. Yeah.
I mean, I think we would have seen a little bit of a more closer game than we actually did.
But even playing a walk-on for 20 minutes, shout out to Piper Mackey. I mean, GW was single digit loss at a power five.
And I mean, you only have like what, six or seven players available to you after half your team gets ejected.
Yeah.
Like playing that close to the like power five team, kudos to GW. I will like full on give you guys a shout out on this. Granted, like that wasn't exactly what we wanted to happen. I mean, I'm just saying
the TCU girl started the fight. I know everyone's she comes in with an open hand. If you want to pull someone's hair intentionally, you do not come with an open hand. You grab with your hand. She gets her hand stuck in the TCU girl's hair. I'm just saying.
I can tell you from playing high school basketball and from watching a lot of D1 basketball, you can physically tell, like, what you were just saying, flat hand.
Yeah.
Not intentional.
No.
Like a closed hand, that's intentional. And I've seen it happen like once at a high school level game and too many times in younger than high school level game. And have been a person that has gotten their hair pulled.
And also the thing too is like, I mean, you know, how many men's games have I gone to where it looks like they're on the vert, like where the referees have to separate them, like every other possession, you know what I mean? Like coaches embrace that. They're not gonna say it. They'll say it in they'll say it in coach speak. You know what I mean? But you know they're like, oh, they're a killer out there on the floor. You know what I mean? And like they want you to be a killer until you actually go for it. And I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying you shouldn't have control of your emotion in the court. But I mean, sports. Everywhere, every sport, every side of every sport is fueled by aggression. And it's going to happen every once in a while. Was there suspension a little much? Sure. Was the fight, did it get a little out of hand? Yeah. I mean, it's no reflection on TCU or GW, but it was a funny moment. And Daniel got the New York Post for it. So that was that was one benefit from it. So
Daniel, why did you have to say, you got to talk to my agent, Sam, when he was trying to schedule this podcast? Why?
I know.
I just want to say.
I've got a million views on that tweet. I'm famous now.
Well, Daniel, I keep sending it to my family because they keep asking me about this fight.
But you know what? Hopefully Daniel's agent won't, block us from getting them on the podcast next time. But hopefully, until then, when all three of us will be here again, keep following A10 Talk, myself, Daniel, Kaylee, keep listening to the A10 Talk podcast and check us out on our Twitter page and our website, a10talk.com. And until then, we'll see you guys next time.